A few weeks ago, I was craving pork spare ribs, and I really wanted to make them, but we had kind of run out of time in the day. Usually I would slow cook them on the smoker. This time I wanted to just barbecue them in order to get them going a little bit faster. So I throw them on the grill, and I've got, you know, one of those probes that'll tell me when it's getting close. It connects to Bluetooth, so it's on my phone, gives me a warning. It's a beautiful system. I love it. And I'm looking at my ribs because, you know, you never want to open the cover. So I'm looking at my ribs, and I see they're at, like, you know, 145 or something. I'm like, all right, we're gonna, you know, pretty soon we're gonna be pulling these things off. And then it drops down to 140, and then it drops down to 135, and then to 130. And I'm like, okay, there's got to be something wrong with my sensor or something like that. No, I had run out of propane. And so I don't know how long the ribs were sitting on there, and they're just spoiling, right? So then I check. I've got 4 propane bottles at my house, and of course all of them were empty. So now I've got to make the decision: do I run to the store? Do I throw them on the slow cooker? Do I stick them on the grill inside do I stick them on the stove inside the house? I'm like, okay, what do I do? Eventually, I made the decision that I'm gonna stick them in the smoker because I didn't know what else to do. Just turn it on high and pray for the best. They were so chewy. I mean, it was the worst experience ever. Today I want to talk a little bit about preventative maintenance, because if I would have shaken that propane bottle before I turned the grill on, I would have known that there wasn't enough propane to finish the job. But as it was, I just pushed right ahead and decided to do it. I asked Casey, and he generously provided some car parts for me to use as a little illustrated sermon here, because I think the idea of preventative maintenance shows up the most when we're talking about vehicles, right? My van, the light just came on, told me that my oil life is at 15% right now, and that I need to, in the next little bit, get it changed. And that's a great thing. It's a great prompt to have, but I haven't done it yet, of course. And as you guys know, it's really easy when the van is running great. When everything is clicking along, every time I hit the button, it starts right up. You know, it's not making any pinging noises. There's no issues that I can detect. It's not swerving from side to side. It's really easy just to ignore that preventative maintenance. And the truth is, I'll probably let it get down to 0% before I actually change the oil in the van. And the reason why is because preventative maintenance is expensive in dollars output. You know, you get under there, you're changing the oil, and then you look over at one of the drive axles, you see one of the boots are cracked, or you start looking at your brake pads, you're like, oh, those are getting a little thin, or you start looking at your tires, and you're like, it's probably, you know, lower tread than is comfortable, so now I need to change these things too. And pretty soon that bill just starts racking up. And even if it's not a financial cost, it's a time cost. It's going to take me, you know, a couple hours to run to the store, get the oil, come back, put it up on the ramps and get under there. And, you know, it's kind of this whole ordeal that you have to go through in order to make sure that your van is running properly, or your vehicle is running properly. What I want to talk to us about today is, what would it look like to do spiritual preventative maintenance? What would it look like to do spiritual preventative maintenance? Imagine if you could run a diagnostic on your life that would tell you when you're looking at the parts of your life, that would tell you, okay, this thing is a little off. The tread is a little low. This is an AC compressor, and so it would tell you you're running low on coolant. You need to recharge the system, or the belt is getting a little bit worn, and you need to replace it. A couple years ago, I had a car that the belt just squeaked like crazy. And of course I ignored it because, you know, it was still running. I was on my way back to Wenatchee, and the belt snapped while I was in Quincy, so it's like 45 minutes from Wenatchee. And then I had, you know, all of a sudden the $15 part and the half hour of my time turned into an entire night of getting it pulled off to the side of the road, going and buying a belt, trying to do the repairs on the side of the road, all of that stuff. In order to fix this vehicle. And as you guys know, that you know, if you run out of gas or you know your battery dies or things like that, it would have been so easy at any point to go and buy the thing that I needed and to put it on. But when I waited, then it caused this huge extra problem in my life. And so again, what I want to talk to us about today is what would it look like to do some spiritual preventative maintenance, so that you can see that maybe your prayer level is a little low, and maybe you need to top off that prayer level, or maybe your attitude needs an adjustment. And so God would say, okay, I'm gonna tweak this thing. I'm gonna go in and I'm gonna do a little bit of repairs right here in order to get your attitude back to level again before you blow up on everybody, right? And so that's where we want to be today. Is we want to pause, we want to reflect, we want to take some time to do some preventative maintenance today. Now, this isn't language that we would normally use when it comes to spiritual things, but I'm guessing that there are some questions that you guys have asked yourself, like something like this. Maybe for the teenagers in here, you're looking at your life and you're saying, life is filled with so many options. I've got so many choices. My entire life is laid out in front of me. I'm getting ready to graduate, or I just recently graduated, and I've got all of these options in life. How do I know that I'm making the right choice? How do I know that I'm going to make it and that I'm going to do exactly what God has called me to do? Parents in here, you might say, I love my kids, but I don't really like them most of the time. Is this a problem, or is it just a phase that we're going through? Empty nesters, you might be asking yourself, is there something more that I should be doing with my life rather than just going home and watching reruns of NCIS or Grey's Anatomy or whatever show is that you like to watch, or going out and playing more golf, right? You might be asking yourself, is there more to life than just what I'm doing right now? If you're retired in here, you might be asking yourself, how can I leave a legacy? Or how do I know that I've hit the mark in my life, and is there something else that I could be doing? And all of these questions are maintenance questions. All of these questions are not, it's not an urgent thing. It's not the car broke down and now I need to stop and I need to fix it. Instead, it's a series of tweaks that get us going in the right direction. Luckily for us, King David prayed a prayer in Psalm 139. So we're gonna turn over there, Psalm 139. He prayed a prayer that gives us kind of a framework or kind of an idea of knowing if we're headed in the right direction as long as we pray it regularly. Our big idea for today is that God knows me better than I know me, so I need to ask him to search me and to show me. God knows me better than I know me, so I need to ask him to search me and to show me. This psalm was written by King David, like I said, and it was his way of saying, God, I'm pretty sure that I'm right. As we read through this, we're going to read through the whole thing. It's 24 verses. We're going to read through the whole thing today. And as we go through it, you're going to see that as he's talking, he's like, I'm pretty sure that I've got this figured out. I'm pretty sure that I'm right in my assessment, but you know better than me. You're bigger than me. You're stronger than me. You're more powerful than me. So I want you to search my heart, and I want you to reveal to me, I think I'm headed in the right direction, but I'm not sure, so I'm going to pause right now, and I'm going to make sure that I'm going the way that you want me to go. There's four truths that are buried in here that are revealed through four different six-verse segments, and they encourage us to go to God in our pain, whether it's external pain or whether it's self-inflicted pain. Psalm 139, starting in verse 1, says this. It says, you have searched me, Lord, and you know me. You've searched me, God, and you know me. You know when I sit and when I stand. You know my thoughts from afar. You discern both my going out to work and when I come home to rest, my lying down. You're familiar with all of my ways. Before a word, I love this thought. Before a word is on my tongue, between in the space of time between when that popped into my head and when it came, you know, traveled the neural pathways into my tongue in order to be able to speak it out, you knew what that thought was going to be. You, Lord, know it completely. You hem me in behind and before, and you lay your hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me, too lofty for me to attain. See, David's saying here that God knows him perfectly, that everything about him is an open book to God. That God has all knowledge about who David is, what makes him tick, even the thoughts that he thinks, God knows ahead of time. He knows what David is going to say before he even says it. And so our first truth that we see in this passage today is that our God is omniscient. The word omniscient just means all-knowing. That there's nothing that is hidden from him. That when he when something happens, he immediately knows it. In fact, he knew, like we're going to see in a little bit, he knew that it was going to happen before it even happened. Our God is all-knowing. He knows the number of hairs on my head. He knows the amount of sand on the seashore. He placed the stars in the sky. And so our first thought today is then that God knows me better than I know me. God knows me better than I know me. Now, when we think about preventative maintenance, again, what we're thinking about is this idea that if there's something that's going to go wrong, I would like to catch it ahead of time so that it doesn't make a big problem later. And God knows me. If God knows me better than I know me, then it makes sense that I would go to him, because he's all-knowing, and ask him, God, search me and show me. But he doesn't stop there. I've got a video, actually, that is going to display the second part of the second section for us. So, Derek, if we could play that at this time.
Today, I looked toward the horizon, and my God was there. I wandered far down winding roads, and my God was there. I climbed the highest mountain tops, and my God was there. I journeyed through the deepest valley, and my God was there. I tasted life anew and fresh, and my God was there. I drank from streams of living water, and my God was there. Where can I go from your spirit? Where can I hide from your presence? If I go up to the heavens, you are there. If I make my bed in the depths, you are there. If I rise on the wings of the dawn, if I settle on the far side of the sea, even there, your hand will guide me.
Verse 7. Where can I go from your spirit, or where can I flee from your presence? If I go to heaven, you're there. If I make my bed in the depths, you're there as well. If I could rise on the wings of the dawn and settle on the far side of the sea, every time I read this verse, it reminds me of Jonah, right? As he's trying to run from God, he's trying to get away from God. And you know, this video showed this as a comforting thought, right? God is always with me. Doesn't matter where I go. Doesn't matter what situation I find myself in. Doesn't matter if I'm walking down a dark alley in the middle of the night. I know that God is there with me. Even when I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, the Bible says that he is with me. And it's a comforting thought. But also, if you're on the run from God, if you're trying to get away from God, if you're trying to hide things from God, knowing that God is with you when you're on your computer late at night, knowing that God is with you when you run to the store and you walk by that certain aisle that's filled with things that you know you shouldn't be drinking, and you're like, I just need to grab one more. I'll quit tomorrow, right? When you're in that conversation at work and you know that things are turning towards gossip, but you just can't help yourself because they would want to be praying about this. And so I'm going to make sure that they have the information so that they can really pray accurately about what's going on. In all of these different areas and all of these different cases, God is there. He says, verse 10, even there your hand will guide me, your right hand will hold me fast. If I say, surely the darkness will hide me. He said, if I say that I can get into an area where I'm going to be covered, where I'm going to be hidden, and the light become night around me, even the darkness will be as day to you. Even in the darkness, even in the obscurity, even in the times when you feel like there you're completely alone, he is there. It says, even in the darkness will not be dark to you. The night will shine like day, for the darkness is as light to you. Wherever we go and whatever we do, God is there. I like to think about this as both a comforting thing, like I said, and as an accountability thing, where when I come into the presence of God, or when I leave and I go to these other places, it doesn't matter. I'm still in the presence of God, and I still have this opportunity to that I know that God is there, and so it should help me to respect and to honor and to be thinking about what God is doing. Whenever we find ourselves in rough situations, whether it's a class or a teacher or a boss that's frustrating you, whether you're trying to make ends meet, whether you're trying to figure out if I'm making the right decisions in life, or it doesn't matter where you go, what you do, or what situation you find yourself in, he is there, because our God is omnipresent. This means that he's everywhere at the same time. Our first point was our God is omniscient. This one, our God is omnipresent. He's everywhere at the same time. Doesn't matter where we go. Doesn't matter what we find ourselves in. He is there. This is a great thought. And it's also a humbling thought to know that he is always there with us. He's everywhere and he knows everything. And now the psalmist is going to stretch our understanding even further about who God is and what he wants to do. Verse 13, for you created me. You created my inmost being. You knit me together in my mother's womb. I like to think about God as being a scientist in a lab, and he's got your mother and your father's DNA stretched out on a table, and he's like, okay, I'm going to pick this one, and I'm going to put it here. I'm going to pick this one, I'm going to put it here. And he's knitting you together. He's forming you in your mother's womb. He says, I will praise you then, because I know that you took time to put me together, that I'm not an accident, that I wasn't a mistake, the things that I struggle with and all of that stuff, any of the genetic conditions that I have going on. God, you cared for me, and you put me together exactly the way that you wanted me. He says, your works are wonderful, and I know that full well. Verse 15, my frame was not hidden from you when I was made in the secret place, when I was woven together in the depths of the earth. Your eyes saw me in my mother's womb. Your eyes saw me when I was still unformed. All of the days ordained for me were written in your book. In other words, it's not just God knit us together, and then there's a theory about the universe that says that God is like the great clockmaker. And that God set the universe in order. He got everything spinning. He wound the gears up. He got everything spinning. And then he just backed up. And he's like, okay, now go. And the idea that God would design this intricate machine and then never interact with it again. But the word of God right here says that that's not accurate. Then in fact, God is more personal than that he saw us when we were still being formed, and even while we were still being formed, he wrote our story. He knows everything about us. This is one of the reasons that we support Crossroads, the Pregnancy Resource Center. And on your way out today, if you haven't yet grabbed one of the baby bottles, I would encourage you to. We're filling them with change, and then we're returning them on Father's Day as a way to support this organization that helps the unborn, that helps those that have gotten pregnant and are struggling with that decision, gives them resources and gives them another way, because we know that God is seeing those babies. We know that God is there in that place. We know that God knows everything, that God is everywhere, and that he's taking care of even the most intimate details of our lives. Verse 17 says, how precious are your thoughts towards me. See, it's not just that God is everywhere and knows everything, but he's thinking about you. He's thinking about me. How vast is the sum of them? He says, were I to count them, they would outnumber the grains of sand. When I awake, I'm still with you. In other words, you're always on his mind. He's always thinking about you because he loves you and he wants to care for you. Our God is omnipotent, our God is omniscient, and our God is intimate. He wants to take care of the most personal details about our lives. He loves us, and he wants to be with us. And that's got to be such an inspiring thought, to know that he knows everything, that he's everywhere, and that he wants to be with us. He's a great big God, and he wants to be involved in my small, insignificant life. I mean, when you stack up my life compared to the universe, what does it matter? And he's always thinking about me, and he's always thinking about you. Psalm 8 is another Psalm of David where he expresses this exact idea. He says, when I consider the heavens, when I think about the sun, the moon, the stars, all of these things that you set in place, when I consider the vastness of creation, he says, what is man that you are mindful of him? Why would you spend time thinking about or even caring about me when you've got new stars that you're creating all of the time in the farthest parts of the galaxy? When you're interested, when you're you know, working on a global level constantly, why are you interested in my life? It's because our God is intimate. He loves us, and he's got a plan for our lives. And so in Psalm 8, he concludes with, oh, Lord, my God, how majestic is your name in all the earth. He says, I can't help but praise you, because not only are you so big, but you're so small. You're so intimate. You're so personal. You care for me. So our God knows all. He's always present. He's involved in all of the details of our life. And now there's a sudden plot twist from King David here as he writes the rest of this psalm. He says, if only you, God, because you know me, because you love me, because you're involved in every area of my life, you're everywhere, if only you, God, would slay the wicked. In other words, if only you, God, would take care of all of the issues. You see how I'm following you, and you know what my life is like. You know me better than I know myself. Like I said at the beginning, this is David saying, I'm pretty sure I'm right about this. I'm pretty sure I know what's going on here. And because God knows what's going on, because God is so big, God is so all-knowing, God is so omnipresent, God is so intimate in knowing, God, why aren't you taking care of my problems? Why aren't you taking care of my issues? We know that you know what's going on, you're here, you're concerned about me, so why am I going through this? Why am I having to struggle with this? It's not like God just found out. It's not like God was on vacation at the time or couldn't get back to us because, you know, he's in Miami, and so he can't really intercede. He can't really, you know, it's not like he didn't know. It's not like he wasn't here. It's not like he was focused on something else, because the Bible says that he thinks about us constantly. So God, why aren't you taking care? Why aren't you meeting my needs? And this is a question that all of us have, isn't it? From one time or another. This is something that we all think about. God, I see what you might want to do in this situation, and God, you're not doing it. So why? Why are you not doing it? He says, away from me, if only you, God, would slay the wicked, away from me, you who are bloodthirsty. And now he's going to say to God, there are people, these people don't just hate me. In fact, maybe they don't even hate me at all. Maybe they just hate you. And God, why aren't you even dealing with that? You know, if it was just people coming against me, I could handle it. But these people are disrespecting you. God, listen to the language he uses here. He says, they speak of you with evil intent. Your adversaries misuse your name. Do I not hate those who hate you, O Lord? I abhor those who are in rebellion against you. I have nothing but hatred for them. I count them my enemies. One of the commentaries that I read this week said that when the more that you are pursuing what is good, the more things that are evil should become like a stench to you. It should cause you to turn your nose away. And we think that's what David is experiencing right here, is that he's been pressing into the presence of God. He's been leaning on God for everything in his life. And now he sees things that are wicked. He sees things that are evil. And his nose is turned away from it. He's like, I can't handle that. I can't do that anymore. The love of good created a hatred of evil inside of him. But first, honestly, the psalmist, King David here, he needs to start looking at the plank in his own eye, doesn't he? And this is where this psalm wraps itself back together. Is Jesus tells this parable, it's so brilliant in saying it's not that you can't pick out what's going on in somebody else's life. It's not that you can't help lovingly correct and confront somebody when you see something that they missed or you see something that's going on in their life. But before you do that, you better examine yourself. You better take a look at your own eye. And so what Jesus compares it to is he says, how dare you try and take the splinter out of somebody else's eye when you've got a giant board sticking out of your own? And you just imagine the logistics of that, right? You got this big board sticking out and you're trying to reach for the splinter in their eye. Like, it's such a brilliant analogy because obviously it's absurd, but also it really speaks to the heart of you can't correct other people in areas where you're also struggling unless you deal with those struggles or acknowledge those struggles first. So what David is going to do now is he started from the top by saying, God, search me. He said, God, I know that you know everything. I know that you're everywhere. I know that you're involved in all of the details of my life. And now he's going to wrap back around. He gave his petition to God. And now he's going to wrap back around. And this is what I want us to do today as we close. He says, search me, God, and know my heart. Test me and know my anxious thoughts. See if there's any offensive way in me and lead me in the way everlasting. Can we put the verse 23 back up on the screen again? And I want us to read this together. And I want us to read it slowly and prayerfully today. To say, God, I want you to examine my heart, examine my life. And I want you to show me the things in my life that need to change. Let's go ahead and read this together. Search me, God, and know my heart. Test me and know my anxious thoughts. Next verse. See if there is any offensive way in me and lead me in the way everlasting. You see, God knows my heart. He guides my steps. He's personally involved in my life, and he wants to protect my heart from evil. Because he knows everything, because he's guiding me, because he's intimately involved with me, our first step should be to look inward. And our first step should be to ask God, before we go and we try and confront somebody else, before we go and try and fix any issues in our lives, before we do anything else, our first response, our preventative maintenance in life should be to say, God, what is it about me? What is it about my life? What is it that I need to fix? Because there's something squeaking, and I can't tell if it's me or if it's the person next to me. If you've ever pulled up to a stoplight and you hear that fan belt going, you're like, oh, is that my car? And then thankfully it drives away. And you're like, okay. Must have been them. Must not have been me. Or your brakes, right? You're pulling in. You're like, oh, hopefully it was the other person. And in the same way, we have the opportunity today to go to God who knows everything about us. He's everywhere we go. And he's intimately involved. We have the opportunity to go to him today. And God, say, God, you know me better than I know me. So I need you to search me and to show me what's going on in my life. This is the type of prayer that's dangerous, isn't it? Because it's asking God to reveal something about me that I might have to not just do a little bit of preventative maintenance. I might not just have to do an oil change, but I might have to go in and replace those brake pads or to fix that drive axle. I might have to do something that's more serious in order to get this issue resolved. So this is a dangerous prayer to pray, but it's so important because if we don't do it now, then we lose our wheel as we're driving down the freeway. And that's a lot worse. All of a sudden, our alternator dies and we have no more power and now we've got to call a tow truck, right? All of these things stack up if we don't take the time to do it. God might ask you today to, God might challenge you in your attitude towards a certain person. God might ask you to think differently or to see from a bigger perspective what's going on in somebody else's life. He might ask you to forgive somebody that you feel like did you wrong, that hurt you, that affected your life. You might have to admit something. You might have to, God might challenge you to serve in kids ministry or to serve on the greeting team or to give 10% or to raise your hands during worship. He might even challenge you today to come forward to the altar because he's got something that he wants to give to you. Our truth again today is that God knows me better than I know me. So I need to ask him to search me and to show me. And what I want us to do today is just imagine for a minute what your life could be like if you would be willing to do some preventative maintenance. Because I think about all of the times when things are spiraling out of control in my life. And if I would have just corrected that attitude, if I would have just done that thing, if I would have just fixed it before it got to this point, how much better would my life be? And now imagine if we were a part of a body where all of us were regularly asking God, God, search my heart. God, test me, check my heart. So that because there are times when we need to go to somebody and we need to confront them, we need to ask them, or we need to share with them what we're seeing in their life. But we should always check our own hearts first. Imagine instead of waiting for your spouse to confront your bad attitude, that you went to them first. You were like, hey, I messed up. I'm sorry. I can change. Imagine if instead of filling up your free time with things that were unimportant, you used your free time, you used your life for something that mattered, something with a purpose. And again, you might come across a more major problem, but ignoring it doesn't help, does it? Pushing it off to the side, it doesn't fix it. It doesn't change anything. What we want to do today is give God a chance to speak into our hearts so that we can hear from him and respond to what he's going to do in us. I'm going to have Pastor Tiffany lead us, and I'm going to open up the altars today, and I'm going to give you an opportunity to come down front, or you're welcome to stay where you are. But I do think there's something special about moving. I do think there's something special about taking that step of faith and saying, God, I'm going to physically move towards you today. And so we're going to open up the altars. We're going to give you guys a chance to just come to God. Say, God, search my heart. Let me read verse 23 and 24 one more time. Search me, God, and know my heart. Test me and know my anxious thoughts. Know all of the doubts, all of the concerns, all of the cares that are going on inside my head. See if there's any offensive way in me and lead me in the way everlasting. Why don't you guys go ahead and stand to your feet today? If you want to come down front, we're gonna just spend a couple minutes asking God to search my heart.